We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We got Michael, and I'll save a little something for after our Michael Lombardi conversation here with Damon Ratto and Kolsky. He's on the line, radio.com sports NFL insider Michael Lombardi. You can listen to his podcast, The GM Shuffle, available on radio.com or wherever you get your podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at indeed.com/hire. Michael, good to have you here. Damon Bruce, Ray Ratto, Matt Kolsky. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you guys? It's great to have the Bay Area. You know, back in the old days, Niners in the conference championship game, kind of, used to play there constantly. Now you get it back. It's awesome.
Right. I mean, Niners, Packers, I think they just had, Tone Loke play halftime?
Yes.
I said, outside of handing out Rubik's Cubes, we can't get more 80s than this.
Yeah, no, I mean, we should get Huey over to play halftime, you know? What's the news? I mean,
totally.
But it's the power. We get the power of love in there, right?
You do host your podcast, The GM Shuffle. When the 49ers decided to shuffle John Lynch in, I didn't know he was going to turn out to be such a good hire. Did you predict that 3 years from his hire date, he'd be named by the writers GM of the year?
Well, I mean, look, I think what Jed York did was probably the smartest thing you could do. Is he went through all those tough years, and he turned over to Kyle, and he let Kyle pick John. And Kyle and John working together are no different than what Bill Walsh and John McVay did back in the day, right? John won Executive of the Year, and John would be the first to tell you that most of the decisions that he made that he got credit for really came from Bill. And I think a lot of this is coming from Bill, not to minimize what John's done whatsoever. But a lot of what they do with San Francisco is an example of harmony and being on the same page and having one voice in one direction. This isn't an independent John Lynch. This is John Lynch working for Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, well,
it's been so successful.
We saw the entire Harbaugh era smother itself under the tension between a GM and a coach. You couldn't
right.
work well together.
Yeah, no, I mean, and Bill used to tell me all the time, the Civil War is the ugliest war. And Jed York eliminated the Civil War, right? He eliminated all that by giving Kyle Shanahan all the authority to be able to do whatever he wanted to do. And he picked John Lynch, and it's a great pick. And they work together hand in hand, and they make decisions together hand in hand. And, you know, and whether it's the Garoppolo trade or the Emmanuel Sanders trade, whatever it is, you know, it's really, it isn't like, hey, I want to do this. We're doing this, Kyle. I don't care whether you like it or not. No. That's not how it's going to go. It's going to go, hey, here's what's best for our organization. What do you think, Kyle? Kyle either says yes or no.
How many other teams right now practically operate that way, where the head coach is basically the final decision maker and the general manager is the facilitator?
Very few, Ray, very few. And I think that's the problem in the NFL. I mean, that's the disconnect, right? You know, there's that war that rages on. I wrote about this for The Athletic. Between analytics and coaches and between, you know, who's the GM of the team and, you know, what the GM wants and what the coach wants. I've been raised in a system by Coach Walsh, and then I went with Belichick, where the head coach has got to be the voice of the organization. He's got to be the spokesman. I mean, we talk about Dallas, right? The Cowboys are 11 games over 500 this century, right? Because they have a Jerry Jones as their spokesman. The players think they work for Jerry, not the coach. Doesn't matter who they hire. They might have a 12 and 4 year, they might be 13-3. At the end of the day, when you do the tally over a decade, they're going to be just above 500 because the inconsistencies that come with that paradigm of organizational structure, it just doesn't work. But very few people are willing to let go. Very few people, they believe in this collaborative effort like we're building a Dave Clark 5 band when the reality of the NFL is it's a paramilitary organization. You got to have one supreme commander whose one voice is commanding what they need to run the offense and the defense that's effective.
If I remember correctly, you were actually in New England with Jimmy Garoppolo, and you were super high on him when he first got here. Now that we've seen a full season, I think most of the Bay Area is pretty high on him, but there are definitely better days than others. In your mind, yeah, what is the key to getting the best from Jimmy Garoppolo?
You know, it's funny. I'll tell you a great story. So when I was in Cleveland, we did a lot of research on all these quarterbacks. And one of the people that was helping me do the research is, unfortunately, is the young girl who died in that plane crash, Carly McCord, down at ESPN. She did a ton of work on Jimmy Garoppolo, knew Jimmy Garoppolo's background better than anybody. So when I went to New England, I was, had that information at my disposal. And I think Jimmy is exactly who he is in terms of his toughness, his ability to overcome mistakes. Yeah, he's not perfect in a lot of things he does, but nothing ever bothers him. And he'll come right back the next play as if it didn't happen. He's kind of got a little bit of a linebacker mentality to him. And his toughness and the way that he relates to his teammates is just filled in that locker room. And partly, and that's the big thing that Kyle's been able to have. That's something I think Kyle thought Kirk Cousins could have given him before he made the Garoppolo trade. And I think he realized Garoppolo gives him this, and it really sets the tone for the team around a really good run game and their defensive front, which dominates most games.
Michael Lombardi here on 95.7 The Game. Going back to the moment of the Garoppolo trade, knowing what you know about Jimmy and what has happened now in New England, the fork in the road that franchise is facing, how much remorse do they have, if any, with the decision to trade Jimmy Garoppolo?
Well, look, I don't think they can have any, right? I mean, when I went to New England there in 14, I mean, Tom was coming off the 13 season where the Patriots went to the conference championship game but ran the football. LeGarrette Blount was the runner. Tom didn't play particularly well that year. They really were a running team. And at that point in Tom's career, everybody thought it was on trending downward, and it was the best time to pick a quarterback. And then the first four games of that season, we were 2-2, didn't play well. Remember the game in Kansas City, got killed. Everybody said, you know, maybe Garoppolo should play. And Belichick said, we're on to Cincinnati. And then Tom, all of a sudden, had a spike in his career that's been remarkable, just flat-out remarkable. So the watch got extended, and who could have predicted it, right? And then add the fact that Don Yee represents Jimmy Garoppolo. He also represents Tom Brady. So how do you do a contract with a player for the future when he represents your present quarterback? Really kind of hard. I think the 49ers were the beneficiary of the Patriots being caught in a position where they didn't think they were going to be in, and it's paid dividends for them.
Going back to Sunday's game, the tendency is to look back at the game in Week 11 and say the Packers can't possibly have a chance because the difference between the two teams was so stark. What can the Packers legitimately do better to the point where they could make this an argument? And in what areas are they simply not equipped to be much better than they are?
Well, they were 1-for-15 on third down, so you know they're going to be somewhat better when they get on third down. The remarkable thing is they had the ball 35 minutes. I mean, you tell me a team who's 1-for-15 on third down and still controls the ball for 35 minutes, the Green Bay Packers that day. I think what you got to do when you play San Francisco is you've got to tire the front out. And they do a good job of rotating the front, but you got to really tire the front out. You can't allow them to be fresh and come after the quarterback on every single play. Because as great as Aaron Rodgers is, that's what ultimately was the deciding factor in the game. The Packers just couldn't block them. And you're going to have to do a lot of different things to move the pocket, to do different launch points, to be able to keep Rodgers where he can throw the football effectively. It might be more shotgun. It may be more play action. It may be more seven-man protections. It may be more, let's just play how fast so that we tire them out. So we can get this game into the fourth quarter. And if they're tired in the fourth quarter, we'll really be able to move the football. That's the key. I think we saw it Monday night when LSU played Clemson. Clemson played great defense early in the game. But what happened late in the game? Clemson's defensive line was tired. They couldn't rush. All of a sudden, you know, now Burrow became a different player. That's what the Packers have to do. They have to get to the point where Rodgers has time to throw the football.
So we have talked a ton about the way Tennessee runs the football with Derrick Henry. I'm wondering, is there anything we can take away from this and apply to what other people ought to try doing, or is this just Derrick Henry is a special man and he's the only one?
Well, he's really unique. I mean, it's almost impossible to tackle. I mean, let's just take the play last week. You know, they get 4th and inches. The Ravens can't convert. First down run, they get 4 yards. Second down, they get 3. Now they got 3rd and 2. They got Matt Judon in the backfield. He's got a clean shot on Henry. I mean, he's going to tackle the guy for a three-yard loss. Henry just flicks him off like a flea, and the next thing you know, it's first and goal at the four. I don't know what you do with that, right? And they're able to stay ahead of the down and distance. You've got to redirect Henry. You've got to force him to have to change direction. He's what we call in the NFL a point of entry back, meaning if he gets to the point of entry clean, it's going to be your problem. And if you don't reroute him off the track, if you don't make him a non-point of entry back, it's going to be challenging. And the thing that I admire about what Tennessee's done, if you go back to the first game, it's 29-20 with 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. The Titans are losing by 9. Most teams would panic, not the Titans. They're going to run the football. They're going to run the ball. They're going to keep doing what they do because they know this. If that offensive line has to drop back pass, they can't do it. They'll get Tannehill killed. The only way they can function as a football team is if they utilize their play-action pass scheme and he runs the ball. They're trapped in that way, and they don't seem to bother with it. And I think that that's really the way they do it. No other team's going to be that committed to their scheme. I mean, Baltimore. Look, Baltimore, they panicked. They threw the ball 22 times in the first half. They're only down 14-3. They panicked. You don't want I love Lamar Jackson more than anybody. I've been touting him as much as anyone. I don't want him throwing it 22 times in the first half. I don't want him throwing it 30, 35 times in a game, let alone 22 times in the first half.
Michael Lombardi here on 95.7 The Game. Who do you got going to Miami?
Oh, you know, that's always so hard. I mean, last year the two road teams won. And then the 4 years before this, it was all the home teams. And for me, it's always been about road-home. I always think there's going to be one home team wins, one road team wins. You know, I have a hard time thinking Tennessee is as well as, even though they beat Kansas City once, I don't know if they can do it again. I think the Packers are going to play way better than they played the last time. They're going to play way better than that. I mean, I'm not sure they're good enough, but they're going to play way better than that. I think it'll be a closer game. I'll go Kansas City, San Francisco. I think the two home teams are the two best teams.
Michael, you know, we've been talking about a passing of the torch. It looks like we're going from a generation of you know, stalwart coaches and quarterbacks to new guys. I mean, sure, Andy Reid still finds a way to hang around the circle of new guys, so congratulations to him. But just looking at how the branch of Sean McVay is running through the NFC title game when you got LaFleur's brother is Kyle Shanahan's passing game coordinator. I mean, we really are looking at whatever poker game was happening in the Shanahan's house when those were teenagers, now in an NFC title game.
No, this game, I agree. This game is really, this game is a tribute. The Green Bay game, I think all the games with the exception of Tennessee is a tribute to Coach Walsh because it all started with him. You know, the genesis of both of these offenses, and then Mike branched it off and put the zone scheme in. And really, I mean, San Francisco, Green Bay, you know, Mike should do the coin flip because he's basically installed both offenses, right? He's done it all for both offenses. And I think when you look at the playoff teams, most of the coaches in these playoff games have either come from the Walsh Holmgren tree or they've come from the Belichick Parcells tree. I think that's been the Shanahan tree, you know? And so I think that's those trees. And that's why Walsh, when he said to me in 1984, we're only competing against 8, he knew there was really only about 8 teams that could win, and I think that's still the same today.
Is that good for football? Is it bad for football? Is it just the nature of the sport that it's always going to be like that?
It's always going to be like that. I think, you know, we got a lot of people in football that think they know football. They're running football teams, and they don't have a clue. I mean, they don't have a clue. I mean, look, the New York Giants are 31st in the National Football League in wins over the last five seasons. I mean, they think it's a coaching problem. They don't think they have an organizational problem. The Cleveland Browns are last in the NFL. They haven't won any game. You know, they can't win. They think it's a coaching problem. The Jacksonville Jaguars in this last decade have had 9 seasons of double-digit losses. They didn't change their front office this year. They think they're got on the right track. They think it's a coaching problem. To me, when all this goes on, you know, it's hard. People say, well, if it's so easy, why doesn't everybody do it? Because I'll tell you why. It's 3 letters, E-G-O, ego. People's ego get in the way of winning.
Was going from the Cleveland Browns to the New England Patriots the equivalent of remedial reading to now we're doing Shakespeare and Chaucer?
Well, the greatest thing is, I mean, I was able to be reunited with one of my best friends in football, a guy who taught me a lot. I mean, we started a lot of things in Cleveland. If you watch the Cleveland 95 documentary, you know, I think that if you read my book, I think it's a tribute to him as much as it is to Coach Walsh, the grading system. So it was awesome for me to go back there. Like, I'm not mad at Jimmy Haslam. He allowed me to win 2 more Super Bowls.
Hey, he might have allowed Robert Saleh to win multiple Super Bowls if the Niners can just do something this year, since the rotation.
You know, sometimes not getting the job might be the best job of all.
There he is. Michael
Kevin Stefanski's about to find that out.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I think that's truly the Dave Clark Five going on there. I think they want a collaborative effort. They want a lot of voices in the room. I wrote this in The Athletic about analytics. They want to be able to have a lot of smart people in the room making smart decisions, right? The problem is you need somebody who knows football. You need somebody who says this was really relevant, this isn't. And who's doing that? I mean, Dee Podesta, their general manager or the president now, admitted as much. He said 3 years ago, I didn't know anything in the NFL. Well, he knew enough to proclaim that Carson Wentz wasn't a top 20 quarterback. He knew enough to say Deshaun Watson wasn't going to be a starter and we're going to trade this pick. He knew enough not to pick Patrick Mahomes. And so now he's 3 years later, he knows enough.
Michael, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Continued success all over radio.com with the podcast and everything. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Michael Lombardi here on 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.